Hi, this isn't the ordinary guy from the Brains Matter podcast, www.brainsmatter.com.
And this isn't Steve Nerlich from Cheap Astronomy, www.cheapastro.com.
But this is Astronomy for Non-Human Life Forms. Isn't it just sheer hubris to assume that us humans are the only ones who have ever looked up and searched the sky for meaning, and even tried to look beyond the visible spectrum for other hidden data that might help us understand the world we live in? So, this podcast is for all those four-footed, winged, finned, shelled, antennaed, pseudopodiad...
Okay, Steve, I think they get it.
Oh, sorry. So, will we start with the birds?
Let's do that.
Okay.
So, you had some bird stuff. Did you want to
I
do
had
your
some
one?
Bird
or
stuff. You... All right, is that right?
Yep.
Well, I wanted to tell you about some German researchers back in the 1950s who were doing things with birds in planetariums. And what they would do was release the birds with a particular sort of night sky projected on the planetarium ceiling. What they found was if they... And remember, these are Northern Hemisphere birds. If they presented those birds with an autumn night sky, and this is where Betelgeuse is in the east, if it's an autumn night sky, the birds would fly south. So they're flying south for the winter. But if it was a spring night sky, they would fly north. And they'd know it was spring because Betelgeuse was in the west.
Well, there are some seabirds called the Leach's Storm Petrels, named after the wonderful William Alfred Leach. The sworn enemy of the petrel is the slaty-backed gull. It sounds very Harry Potter, I think. In a paper by, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Yutaka Watanuki at Hokkaido University in 1986, he said that petrels reduced their activity in moonlight when predation rates by the slaty-backed gulls was highest. It was found that petrel activity levels were inversely correlated with light intensities from our moon. And the conclusion was that the nocturnal activity and moonlight avoidance by the petrel colonies evolved as a defense mechanism.
So am I right in thinking they don't fly when the moon's up because they're visible to their enemies?
Pretty much. You know, when they're going foraging post-dusk, they do realize that when the moon's out, they're more likely to become dinner.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. All right. I was telling you about how birds can navigate by the stars, they can also navigate by the sun. There's some researchers who've looked at swallows.
Is that European or African swallows?
Well, even if an African swallow could carry a coconut, they're not migratory. So these migratory swallows, which are the European swallows, are often found perching on power lines. And if you look carefully, at least these researchers allege, in the morning they're always facing east, in the evenings they're always facing west, and what they're doing is getting their bearings from sunrise and sunset, and the birds can pick up polarized light from sunlight. So as the sun's coming up in the morning, it might not come up at due east, but the light that it's transmitting always has the same orientation, and it would seem the birds are able to pick up the light that's being polarized in a particular plane. That's telling them where due east is, so when they compare that to where the sun actually is, they get a reasonably good sense of what latitude they're at. I can keep going.
Okay.
What was the other thing? Well, I'll tell you more about pigeons.
Okay.
So birds have ways of navigating by night using the stars and by day using the sun, but they also have an extra sense. This is magnetoreception. And this is, of course, a sense for the Earth's magnetic field, which might help them get around when it's cloudy and overcast. Pigeons seem to be particularly good at that. You can give them these little goggles so they can't really see very far in front of them and they can still home. So pigeons rather be migratory, just have a strong urge to fly back to their nest, essentially. So they're homing pigeons. So they use their magnetic sense to home. So first to go out and then to come back again. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm finished.
Yeah, okay. All right, so now I'm going to talk about loggerhead sea turtles. And these sea turtles have an amazing sense of navigation and orientation. So it's not believed that they use visual cues such as the stars to navigate. As soon as the hatchlings are born, they go straight towards the open sea, and they can maintain their heading well after you lose sight of land. So how do they manage these feats? So let's start at the beginning. Experiments were done on hatchlings back in 1960 and 1968 to see if they could find water if they had their eyes covered. They found that once the hatchlings had their eyes covered, they couldn't find their way to water. So it's believed that the oceanic horizon at night is brighter than the landward horizon, given that water reflects more moonlight and starlight than the land. If you can imagine yourself with Coke bottle glasses in front of your eyes, you might not see things clearly, but you can see where the light is. However, some experiments done in 1992 found that slope might be a driver as well as the amount of light. And, you know, the slope makes sense as land tends to slope towards the water in coastal areas. So going on a little bit from there, Lohmann and Lohmann in 1993 also discovered that magnetic orientation played a part in directional preference for loggerhead turtles. The turtles oriented set to north in a geomagnetic field. They tested this by placing control conditions and observing when the turtles oriented themselves. And curiously, once the magnetic fields were reversed, so were the orientations of the turtles. So the best way to view the way loggerhead turtles orient themselves is basically through the following. From when they're hatchlings, from going from shore to the ocean, it's a combination of visual cues and the slope of the land. And once they're in the water close to land, they do it via wave orientation because as waves come closer to the shore, there's a certain periodicity as it comes closer to the shore as opposed to out in open water. In the open sea, where there's a lack of visual cues and a lack of periodicity, they go via magnetic orientation. And that's exactly what the loggerhead turtles are doing.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that the basis of a lot of magnetoreception is a compound called magnetite, which is a particular sort of iron ore where the electrons of a collection of iron atoms are all orientated in a particular way so that essentially you have a magnet. So magnetite is just a sort of natural magnetized material, but it would seem a lot of animals everywhere from bacteria up to complex animals like birds absorb that magnetite from the environment. And at least in the bacteria and insects, we know they further modify that material to essentially build crystals within their bodies. And at least in the smaller animals, we can tell they're essentially just lining those crystals up so that you have a compass needle within that animal. And I can only refer to the small animals. It becomes quite difficult to isolate the magnetite in larger animals, because they're that much larger, it's hard to sort of dig into their brains to find exactly where this magnetite is. So I'm telling you all this because we also know that humans have magnetite in their brains. It's unclear whether that's just a result of us absorbing some natural magnetite from the environment or whether it's a sort of evolutionary hangover from an ancestor that actually used it for magnetoreception, or whether it does actually have some effect on our sense of the world. Some research has suggested there might be a few individuals within large groups who seem to be better at finding their way around with no visual cues than others, but it does seem to be a very weak sense if there is one at all. So I wonder if anyone feels they have magnetoreception at any level. I don't think I do.
I don't either, but if you do, please contact us.
Yes, send emails, yes.
And you mentioned the magnetite just then, and I'm glad you did, because I just want to talk a little bit about bees. Bees are colorblind in dim light, or so it's thought anyway. They're primarily active during the day, and as we know, they've got compound eyes. William Kerfoot wrote a paper on animal behavior in October 1967 that the nocturnal bee, let me get this right, Spicodogastra texana, which was observed in some experiments in 1962, 1964, and 1965, that the foraging of texana was based on the lunar cycle, and he classified it in two parts, the crepuscular period and the moonlight period. The crepuscular period is from between sunset and the end of twilight, so not a huge amount of time. And the moonlight period occurred from the day after the new moon until 3 days after the full moon. And during this time, foraging continued to happen as long as the moon was up. So Kerfoot wrote that lunar activity was an extension of the twilight foraging. And a paper called Biogenic Magnetite as a Basis for Magnetic Field Detection in Animals mentions that there are a large number, and we're talking about 10 to the 8, superpermagnetic magnetite crystals in honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've got to say about bees.
Thank you.
So what we've discovered today is that there's a huge influence that astronomy has on all these creatures. So we've talked about visual cues, magnetic cues, the effect of the Earth's magnetic field, the sun, the moon, the stars, on the way these creatures live. And I don't know if many people would normally think about creatures being influenced by astronomy.
Well, I'm worried we've been speaking for nearly 10 minutes and we haven't mentioned sex. So I think this is an important issue here.
Well, we've already talked about the birds and the bees. I must point that out.
That's true. You're right. But yeah, I was going to mention coral reefs. We find this around Australia, particularly coral reefs are made of individual coral organisms, which are animals, and they need to reproduce. And they're sort of stuck in hard calcium shell-like structures. They can't really get out and get to know each other that way. So what they do is to coordinate the release of eggs and sperm, and they do this by seemingly tracking the lunar cycle, so that there's a particular night when, and it's generally a full moon, when all the coral will just spawn at the same time. And that's how they manage to reproduce.
Well, I've certainly learnt a lot today.
Yes, me too. All right, should we do a wrap-up?
Okay.
Thanks for listening. This is Steve Nerlich from Cheap Astronomy, www.cheapastro.com.
And this is The Ordinary Guy from the Brains Matter podcast, www.brainsmatter.com. Cheap Astronomy offers an educational website
where brains really do matter. No ads, no profit, just good science. Bye.
Bye for now.
Well, why don't we read this intro that we did, and that'll warm us up a bit.
All right.
All right. Hi, this is The Ordinary Guy from the Brains Matter podcast, www.brainsmatter.com.
And this is...
Oh, did I say this isn't?
You said this is.
Let me start again.
Yep.